Welcome back. We're delighted to be with Tony Horowitz, who has written a number of books that invite us to think a little bit anew. When you were talking about truth and fiction, I have learned that in reading a book, it's always important to read the acknowledgments. And I was absolutely, talk about pattern recognition, delighted to see that Jill Lepore is one of the people that you thank. Sure. She quite recently, at least in I'm always behind on my New Yorkers, but right. in a fairly recent New Yorker, Jill Lepore wrote an exquisite piece
right.
on fiction versus nonfiction, on what is history and what is fiction, with fiction when it is relegated to sort of a make-believe.
Right.
Well, that ain't true. And Jill Lepore's ideas about the nuance, the subtlety between history as it is written and fiction as it is written, what you've done here, I would think, would just thrill her, that it's an exemplar of this of this tossed salad that is all of the above.
Well, also, as I remember that piece, one of the interesting things she pointed out is history as we think of it as it's written today is a really quite a recent invention, basically late 18th century, and that before that, history was a very different thing. Yeah, it was saga, it was myth, etc. There wasn't this notion of trying to put together history the way we do now.
As if you could do that.
Right, exactly. It's a sort of Enlightenment idea. And I think it's relevant to this story because one of the reasons the Pilgrims have been sort of enshrined as our founders is that happened really in the early 19th century, in the early years of this new science of history, was really when they began writing America's history. And it was mostly Protestant New Englanders. And
The writers.
And as they looked back to the country's origins, perhaps not surprisingly, they elevated their own forebearers who had landed at Plymouth.
Surprise!
And diminished the role of the non-English, of Catholics, of Spanish, French, and even of Southerners. Hence Jamestown, even though it precedes Plymouth, to this day still plays second fiddle somehow. So I think it kind of fits a little bit her paradigm also of just how she was describing the history of history itself.
She also, I think it was in that article, had a sort of almost a throwaway line that there are people in academic situations, universities and colleges, that talk of history as a science now, as if there is a science of history, which particularly given the kinds of things we're talking about, seems to me to be a really a misguided idea that either misapprehends what science is, and science, that's still up for grabs, or more perhaps dangerously misapprehends the human experience and our relationship to ourselves, our communities, and our past.
Right, and how subjective it inevitably is. On the other hand, I think you can go too far the other way into whatever you want to call it, postmodern view that there is no truth, there are no facts. And I run into it a lot with this subject again, where people want to believe things, and not necessarily the old myths. There are all kinds of new myths. Columbus was Jewish. The Chinese discovered America, etc., etc. People who want to latch on to what, in my view, are myths based on very slim or non-existent evidence, partly arguing that, well, your facts are not facts. There are no facts. We can believe anything. It's all point of view. And I'm not particularly comfortable with that.
Well, you are a reporter after
either.
All.
Yeah, I mean, I do.
And we'd like to think that matters.
Yeah, and I think you can make a good faith effort, and you obviously have to recognize it's always going to be subjective, and particularly when you're looking at a period this long ago, your sources are slim and often unreliable, so you can't be cavalier about saying, well, because it was written down by a conquistador 450 years ago, it's therefore true. Here's evidence. On the other hand, to throw that away completely and say we can't come to any consensus about what actually happened makes me uncomfortable.
Absolutely. Well, and that goes back to the Enlightenment piece, that evidence, there is something to be said for having more or less agreed to evidence.
Right.
And I guess I think of that in the context of the other side of that with Joseph Ellis's biography of George Washington.
His Excellency, yeah.
In which, and it was in this the context of history, was a very interesting story that I simply hadn't heard, which is that Washington, almost all of his life, was writing his memoirs with history in mind.
Right.
And, so rewriting.
So it is not, you know, it's not sufficient to go back to the original text. It's not as sufficient... You know, you're in Newfoundland, and I think, and somewhere in there, am I really learning something? Are these people, I think, barking mad?
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, what we take for evidence becomes, I would think, a real challenge. And in some ways, it seems as if your writing, the way you approach these subjects, tries to subsume that contraposition between...
Subsume the contraposition. you want to try that again?
In English?
Yeah.
No. He's the writer. The challenge between... Well, essentially, what can I trust? What can I rely on?
Exactly. It's a little bit, I feel, what I had to do as a journalist in a different way because my sources are completely different. But
that's an important story, though, that we forget about journalism.
Yeah, is you need to weigh your sources. Why is this person speaking to me? It's a little bit like Washington with his memoirs. Mm-hmm. People have an agenda. Why is this person speaking to me? Are they reliable? How can I check it against something else, etc.? So I think in some ways that's what you're doing with history as well. But, you know, it's always a challenge. And I just think you have to be modest about it. You have to assume that you're never getting the whole story and be honest with the reader about that and not present it as if it's cut and dried.
You've just given me a major ping. Journalist, the very word, one keeps a journal. Mm-hmm. It is about journaling. It's not that you are God. It's not that you are you're not Mercury with the fact lantern in your hand. Yeah. Journalists are presenting their perspective on a journey that is at that moment and that story. And I'd really never thought about the journal part of journalist, which is different from reporter.
Right.
And what you're doing here, I mean, it is really quite an important distinction between reporting as best one can, fact, as best we can understand. We've been watching lots of mysteries lately, and even fact is pretty messy if you're looking at murder mysteries, which I love. This notion of the journey, you've lived that. This is sort of the journalist gone nuts, isn't it?
I never actually thought of it that way. I always thought journalist and reporter in the modern sense have become synonymous, but, you know, that's an interesting way to look at it. And certainly, I would say this isn't standard reporting. It's one reason I love to write books. I loved working as a newspaper reporter, but it does have real limitations
including the assignment editor.
The assignment editor, but, you know, beyond that, well, length, obviously. It's great to be able to spend a few years on something instead of a few days. To have a strong point of view, which in reporting you don't, at least overtly. But also, to be a little more creative, perhaps, in how you go about your reporting, for lack of a better word, and to do it through travel, to do it through anything that comes your way, really. Any straight conversation, any bizarre experience can somehow become part of the story, which can be a little hard to do in journalism, or also to bring yourself into the story. As much as I do in my books, so, you know, you can do it a bit in journalism, but it only if it's
you got really forgiving
small doses, and only if it's really relevant. Otherwise, it's awkward to put yourself in a newspaper story. Yeah,
there is also, I think, just the requirement of surface that daily, particularly daily journalism, only dealing with the surface. An event, an earthquake in China.
Yeah.
Bodies, things, buildings falling down. Yeah. The context is, basically gets lost in this. And to me, in many ways, the kinds of work that you're doing is a much better first pass at history.
Mm-hmm.
Than a lot of people talk about journalism as being, the first.
The first draft, and
a lot of people go back to journalism to report the histories, and a lot of times that's all that is available. The challenge frequently is in the the contextualization of it.
Right.
And what you're doing in these books that
right.
I think you were probably not able to do as a reporter mm-hmm. is to contextualize both in terms of the physical environment in which these things happen, but more importantly, the historical environment,
mm-hmm.
The cultural environment,
right.
all the things that start making sense of just this event.
Right. It's really about time and length more than anything. You know, mm-hmm. I had the luxury of working at the Wall Street Journal when actually they did give you a lot of time and a lot of space by newspaper standards.
Right.
We would write stories that were, you know, 3,000-4,000 words long. Some of them you might spend a couple months on. That was very unusual then, and now I think extremely rare in newspapers. So it's really just about having the luxury, as you do with a book, to take the time to delve in a little deeper and have the enough words to tell a story with some context. But I think you're right. Newspapers are a little allergic, I found, to history. I mean, they don't call it the news business for nothing.
It's new.
And I've always been a history nut, so I was always trying to sneak in a few paragraphs of only semi-relevant history, just to give the reader a little context. Well, I'm in Bosnia, and this is how this country was formed, etc. And, you know, when your stories get cut, which they inevitably do, I found the paragraphs of history were almost always the first to go.
Well, and Bosnia is a wonderful example of that. I mean, they're you know, almost any place you go, you simply cannot make sense.
Right.
Out of the Balkans,
yeah.
If you don't know that history, and it goes back 1,000+ years.
Right, and that was probably a poor example because actually that would have been the rare story where it was so history haunted and it was so obviously relevant to the story that actually I would say we were able to get more history into our stories about Bosnia than almost anywhere else. But you know, if I were writing about some place where it wasn't as obvious, then the history would go.
As in rediscovering the new world. A voyage long and strange. Tony Horowitz is our guest. We all will be back in just a moment. Join us.